The Fancy Film Fellows employs a frank discussion of cinema that includes adult language and descriptions of mature situations. We have no concern for spoilers, so be warned, you might learn more than you'd care to know.
吃了，还有个豆腐饺子。
哇，你做了够十个人吃的。
我一做菜就做这么多，因为我学做菜在一间大馆子厨房学的。那个厨房
怎么样？
好奇怪，我好像没什么童年记忆，除非我把他们煮出来。
小时候事情我根本记不得。
我跟你讲，小时候我爸有多亲切多好玩，你一定不相信。
Hey, here's the popcorn.
It's Slumber Party Cinema.
Hey everybody, another Fancy Film Fellows Slumber Party Cinema. We are coming to you just a three cast today. Just me and my esteemed colleague Ruben. Say hey Ruben.
Hey Ruben.
Good job. Nice job doing exactly what I told you to do. And Ilya's here too.
Hello.
He's made it back.
I have.
We thought we had lost him.
Yeah.
Well, I'm found again.
He made it through the wilderness. He finally made it through.
Did no one how lost I was till I found you.
If you hear a ruckus in here, the cats are going crazy.
As usual, when there's a ruckus on this podcast, that is the reason.
The cats are going wild. The leaf blowers are going wild outside. The wild leaf blowers are, you know, doing their thing outside. And we're here. We're going to talk about a movie from 1994, directed by Ang Lee. It's called Eat, Drink, Man, Woman.
Yes, we are. And I'm going to do the summary of this movie. Yeah.
Flip it to Ilya. He can give us a rundown.
Thank you, Patrick. Eat, Drink, Man, Woman is based in Taiwan. It's about a family, patriarch of the family named Chu, who has a tradition of eating dinner on Sundays with his three daughters. His oldest daughter, Jia Jen, who works as a school teacher. His second oldest daughter, Jia Chen, who's a successful businesswoman in some sort of airline, works for some sort of airline company, I think. And a college student, the youngest of the daughters, Jianing, who works, I think, is either at Wendy's or like some other fast food.
Yeah, it's Wendy's
joint. And the movie's basically about these four, the relationships that all four of them kind of get into, the changes in their family as they kind of deal with both personal changes and like professional things going on. While all the while like struggling to like kind of retain a sort of family bond throughout the movie, and how much that changes. So what did you guys think?
Who do we throw it to first? Ruben, you go first, since Ilya's doing the
We don't do that on Slumber Party Cinema.
That's right. We don't care what we thought of it.
Yeah, we're just going to discuss happened.
Yeah, we're going to jump right into topics.
Jump right in.
Well, the first topic that we want to talk about is a pretty obvious one, since the title of the movie is Eat, Drink, Man, Woman. We're going to talk about food.
Yum, yum.
Yep. And this movie has a lot of food in it, so it's a very aptly titled film. I actually really enjoyed all of the scenes where it just shows Chew cooking something, or it shows...
made me really want Wendy's.
It does have some Wendy's in it, too. I thought that was very funny, though, that that one of the daughters just worked at a fast food place because she just doesn't care about cooking. She's just like, whatever. But then the middle daughter, I believe it's Jia Chen, is also very interested in cooking, and she does some cooking in the movie, too.
She's very good.
Yeah, it's hinted that she's probably even better than her father, because he's gotten old and lost some of his taste, so he can't quite taste the food and make sure that it's done properly anymore. He actually like leans on his second in command at the restaurant he works in a lot. I really like watching the sort of like preparation stages of the food, though. There's something very kind of elegant about it, but also, I don't know, like, what's
technical?
Technical, but also like deeper than that. I feel like there's something kind of primal about just like watching something that you're going to be consuming being prepared like that. I don't know. So there's something both elegant and technical and like deeply human about it. Is you're like, oh, this like connects all human beings. Like, we all must have food.
Yeah, I mean, the most obvious thing that the movie spells out when they're like at dinner one time, and one of the, I think the oldest daughter complains about the couple next door singing too loud, singing karaoke to each other, and then the middle daughter is like, well, I mean, they communicate through singing, we communicate through food. That's what we do. And the whole, I guess, the scrumptiousness and like the delicate preparation and the work that the dad puts in is like the ersatz of like any other feeling or, you know, kind word that he really has for most of his daughters. I mean, every once in a while he'll say something sort of nice, but most of the time, especially towards the middle daughter, he's pretty reserved. If not cold, there's a similar scene happens when Jia Chen, the middle daughter, cooks for this guy that she's banging, she clearly the idea behind like she cooks way too much, and it's like a surprise because before that, you know, she's kind of seen as like the outcast of the family and like. Maybe she doesn't even really feel like she's the least likely to continue this tradition or whatever. And then you actually find out, oh, she's really, really good at cooking. And she overcooks for this guy. And clearly it's a sign of like her affection, not being able to tell him that maybe she wants more out of this relationship. And the guy clearly also doesn't really respond in the way that, you know, she was hoping. So mm-hmm. It's always like a symbol of like, the things that you can't say or speak out loud.
Yeah.
Which is sad.
Yeah, like, it's sad.
Because food is not a replication for for honest communication. Something I experience a lot in the Jewish community as well, is that people want to use food to be like, I made you this food. It means I love you. And I'm like, no, you also have to say it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Do you think Ang Lee gets that, or do you think that he... I don't really know how Lee feels about the patriarch by the end of the movie. Like, did he do a good job?
I think he's a little...
person?
I honestly think he's a little critical of him. By the end, I think that so there's.
I know, I sure am.
Yeah, there's a final kind of, I guess you would call it a set piece for the movie where they have this big dinner, and they invite over, I believe her name is Madame Liang, and I think it's Madame Liang's daughter. Madame Liang's daughter, and they all think that Chu is going to announce that he's like getting married to Madame Liang. Like there's like
she's been flirting with him.
Yeah,
the whole
movie. It's this big build up to it, and then his announcement is that he's actually been like secretly seeing her daughter the whole time. And
who is his daughter's age?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah,
very,
they're friends.
Very wide age gap, yeah. And I that scene is kind of played for laughs, but I think it's supposed to be kind of a God, I don't know how you would describe
it. Well, the daughters are shocked when it happens.
Yeah, yeah. I don't think anybody's
Madame
happy.
Liang faints.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I don't think anybody's happy about what happens. Yeah. I think it's supposed to be kind of a catastrophe.
Yeah, I mean, they're both probably happy that it's not Madame Liang, because by all accounts, she seems like a horrible person.
Yes. More age appropriate, but not a good person.
Yeah, sure. I mean, yeah.
But I don't know, like, I think that is kind of, that's supposed to be a calamity at the end, and just another shakeup for the family, because that's kind of what the movie's been about. It's been about, like, these shakeups and, like, how they cope with crazy things and, like, sad things happening.
Yeah, I think it's also like kind of a, I'm not even sure if it's necessarily an indictment or that it even has to be, but I think it definitely is like an acknowledgement of the fact that people sometimes act in very base, selfish ways, even though they act to like as if they're doing things, you know, for the family or whatever, like their main sort, their main thing that they care about is the family or whatever it is. Maybe it's not. Sometimes it really isn't. Like, clearly the Chu at the end of the movie was like, well, two of my daughters left. I don't really feel like being here in this house anymore. I might as well just even... I've had this thing going on. I didn't want to tell anyone, but who cares? Now everyone's telling their stuff, so I'll tell mine. And basically leaves his daughter, his middle daughter, hanging completely, right? Not to mention embarrasses everyone at that table. I mean, yeah, that play scene is definitely, it's played in a way like for laughs, because the movie has like a pretty light touch a lot of the time. But I wouldn't say that necessarily Ang Lee is too critical of the guy for being that way. I think he's just like, well, yeah, he's just kind of a selfish guy, and he will, you know, there's the irony is that this super successful business lady is going to be the one who actually gives a shit about any of the family traditions in the end. That's like his main irony, I guess. And
I think the sort of way that I feel about the movie, without saying anything positive or negative, is that the movie is very much replicating its patriarch, and that it has this like delicately made, technically expert product that it's produced for us, but that it actually keeps its what it's communicating very close to the chest. And so I left the movie being like, I don't know how Ang Lee feels about any of this.
Yeah,
I do think it's kind of clever reversal, though, because you expect there to sort of like be this, I don't know, like change this forward motion within the character, and by the end he's still the same, he's still kind of the same guy. He still acts in the same like kind of selfish way, where he's, you know, he's basically just like, I'm, you know, he I guess seemingly thinks that he's making a big statement by doing this, but everybody else is just like, ah, it's still, you're still, you know, the same like selfish jerk that you've always been to us.
Well, he does what's best for him, I think. That's probably what the main change with him is. Before that, he's like supposedly doing things for his daughters. Like he's supposedly feeding his three daughters and like all that. And then at the end, he's like, I actually just want to do stuff for me now. Whatever makes me happy. And that's like, that's the end. That's his character development. And I think like what I did enjoy, I mean, but we can, I don't know if that's kind of fits with this theme anymore. I thought the strongest part of the movie is actually kind of like getting these like weird, like uncomfortable, like family is something that you kind of, you know, you don't really choose, right? Just people that you kind of thrown together with, and then if you're lucky, you know, you get along with them. There's really not much you can hope for beyond that. That's all there is. Like, you have maybe as parents, you have an obligation to be a certain way towards your children, sure. But later on, you're just hoping that maybe, you know, you're okay with each other. And I think that there's like moments in this movie that get that pretty well. And especially like the, like, there wouldn't be any other reason for the middle daughter and the older daughter to be friends like in life ever, right? There's almost, there's nothing between those two that would ever make them want to hang out or anything. But like, there's still like such a strong influence that they have on each other, where like the middle daughter, before she ends up not sleeping with that guy because she thinks in her head that might be the guy that broke her sister's heart once upon a time. And because of that, she doesn't go through with that, and that has a lot of implications for her. I think that was like those, like, weird moments like that is like when you, like, you realize that family has a much stronger like influence on you than you'd ever want to care to admit. And I think that that's what this movie, I think, gets pretty right.
I think we're already kind of touching on it, but I think we should move to our next topic, I guess, and that's the social expectations.
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of wanted to talk about this too, because I mean it ties in very heavily with family, because there's a lot of, you know, tradition tied up in family and kind of the ways that parents hope their children turn out and try to steer their children towards things. And one of the big, I guess, sort of like driving plot points that we learn in the movie is that Chu actually steers his middle daughter away from cooking into something else, because he's like, well, you can't be successful at cooking. So he's kind of reacting to the social moire of like women being cooks, you know, being like successful cooks. I think a lot of the movie is about that. It's about the way that these characters' lives have been shaped by the expectations that are put on them. And I do think it's interesting too that we see sort of the there's such a like clear divide between everybody's their storylines and their personalities, especially with the daughters. So you've got the oldest daughter who is a school teacher and also like a Christian, which is kind of a weird thing to see in a Chinese movie. I don't think that Christianity gets broached very often, but it's you know, very like early on we see her just like listening to like hymns, like choir hymns and stuff like that on her. So she's like this deeply religious person, but also kind of caught up in this, you know, like trying to find someone scenario. And so she's kind of battling that idea of like religion, but also love and romance. And, you know, it doesn't play a huge factor, I guess, in her decision making, but it is interesting that there is this like the whole family is like, oh, she'll never find anyone because she's religious. So they have this like expectation of like what religious people are like and like how they act, and they've basically just given up all hope for her because of that. And, you know, really deep down, she's just like got this, you know, got the longing to find someone, and does eventually find it. Maybe the funniest character in the movie, the like motorcycle volleyball riding guy. Volleyball, the yeah. Volleyball teacher.
Yeah. gets baptized for her.
Yeah, that was very funny too.
Very committed, I was like, dude.
There's a part in the movie where one of the sisters is talking to her and says he's not a Christian. She says he will be. It's like,
yeah, it's interesting. Yeah. I felt like that was like the movie's I was really wondering, like, I thought that volleyball guy was a bit too cool for this, for her, to be honest. Like, he seemed really fun. and like honest with his like pretty like open guy. A bit surprised that he ended up like that she does end up with him. But it's fun because usually it's the other way around, and like it's a weird dude that ends up with a cool lady, and it's here it's the opposite, so that's fine.
I also wanted to talk about Sue, her the interactions with her students also, because I think there is a kind of like judgment going on with the, you know, sort of like young boys, where they play this very mean prank where they keep writing her these letters posing as someone else.
Horny letters.
Yeah, like weird horny letters, like posing as someone else. And I think it's probably due to her religiousness, and also the fact that she is, you know, like a woman in a position of some like authority over them, where they just like have to rag her in some way because they're, you know, young men, and young men are kind of the worst. But it's, you know, I don't, the whole,
let's not count out old men, they're also, well, extremely, yeah, bad.
Old men are terrible too. There's a special kind of brazenness to young men, I feel like. I don't know, it's like the first time they've ever had the idea to do that, to do bad things, and they're like, oh wow, do it with gusto or whatever. But it's yeah, the whole like school dynamic is, I don't know, it's interesting to me because it, oh gosh, what is she teaching? She's teaching them math, I believe, isn't she?
It's a science.
Yeah, it's some sort of,
yeah, science. Might be like a combination science class, I'm not sure. Yeah.
Yeah, but it's interesting because like out of the three
chemistry.
Yeah, out of the three daughters, she kind of has the most like technical difficult job of all of them, because you don't really realize at first, but she's in there like teaching them all these like complex equations and things like that, and she's got to like be so loud that she has to like use a microphone to talk to everyone in the class.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, yeah, I think she dropped out of college, right, or something, because of this guy that she was dating. When then she, and it turns out, well, she made that whole story up, yeah, or whatever.
She made that
story, so it's, yeah. Which I like that the movie never comes back to. Like after that is revealed, like you're supposed to, like there's supposed to be a confrontation, but you never get to it because that's she just gets married to this guy and that's it. First the uncle guy dies or whatever, the friend of the of Chu dies, and then she gets married.
Yeah, Uncle Wen isn't his name.
Yeah, no,
the scene with the middle daughter and that guy, when, because he starts working for the same airplane marketing firm that she's working for, and he's like, we should go out sometimes, and then they're like kissing, and she's like, call me, and she says like her full name to try to like remind him of his sister, and he's like, okay, and he does it, and then she's like, you've already forgotten, and says her sister's name, and he's like, no, that name sounds familiar to me, well, do you know her?
that was a weirdly so funny scene. Yeah, because that really goes against expectation. Like you're also expecting for that guy to be a total jerk, right?
Yeah. It's no,
like,
he's fine.
But he's actually really, really okay. He's a really nice, okay dude with who knows boundaries and stuff. Like that's very remarkable.
He's like, oh, you want to stop? You seem really angry.
Yeah. And this scene at the end too, where they're just like, let's just be colleagues. And they just like, you know,
and shake friends. Hands. Like, yeah.
I was like, this is nice. Didn't expect this. He seems like one of those like weird kind of like loner, like quiet genius types, where he's just like sitting in the corner, like bored by everything throughout the whole movie. And then you just find out, you're like, oh, he just doesn't want to do this. He just hates this job.
Yeah, and then he just like loves playing video games.
I like her comment about it, where she's just, why would you want to kill aliens that are that adorable?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Why would you want to kill cute aliens?
Any more on social?
Well, yeah, I want to go way back to talk more about the middle daughter, And mm-hmm. I guess, like, the confusing nature of being in, I guess, at least a family, if not a society, that wants to transpose love onto food, but then also tells women that they can't cook. Like,
yeah.
Are they not supposed to love? And there's something strange, I guess, as well about, like, the way in which the social expectations around talking about food, because, like, the daughters will, like, make a face because the father is failing at cooking, mm-hmm. and he'll be like, "What is it?" And they'll be like, "It's fine." And he'll be like, "No, seriously, what is it?" And it's like, you didn't leave it in the, you know...
Yeah. The smoker long yeah, enough or whatever.
The smoker yeah. long enough. You didn't... Yeah. It's too much sugar sauce. And then he's like, "No, it's good."
It's like, "No, I'm a good cook."
Even though he says so. Even though he knows that he's having physical ailments that are preventing him from reaching his peak cooking ability.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But, like... And that's preventing him, like, in his mind from loving his daughters. But then when they point it out to him, he's, like, mad about it.
Yeah, it's, like, totally something he just made up.
Very human.
Yeah. Yeah. Agree. He's a very human character, that dude. Very strange. Like, also, like, I mean, the just the ritual that he has, like, waking up the daughters, the way he wakes them up every day, it really reminded me of, like, the way my granddad in Moscow used to wake me up. Like, he would, like, it's totally like a dude that later on in life became, like, a pretty tender and loving person, but before that was, like, pretty hard, had a really hard time at expressing that. And whenever he would wake me and my brother up, he'd first try it gently, but then if it didn't work, he'd immediately start yelling. Because he was just like, he grew so quickly frustrated with like a more tender approach not working immediately, that he just immediately jumped towards, like, and there's a scene where he does that to the middle daughter, like, later, for example, in the movie, where he touches her gently and then it doesn't work. He's like, "Wake up." It's late. which I thought was a nice moment for sure.
When all his daughters start marrying, he tries to be inclusive with them, so he's having the husbands over for Sunday dinner, and they can't catch the chicken to be slaughtered. Yeah. And so he's, like, yelling out the window. He's like, "Just grab one of them."
He's like, "One of you run after it, and the other one catch it."
Because he's been catching the chickens by himself for years.
Yeah. Yeah, he has no patience for two dudes not being, way younger dudes not being able to catch one.
Even though he's trying to be nice. He's exactly. "You guys are part of the thing. You can do the easiest task. Catch the chicken."
Oh, my gosh.
But, yeah, what I was sort of saying to Patrick is that I don't know if I have any further commentary on it, but it's weird to have, it might just be a family, but possibly society-wide expectations where food is love, and then also women can't cook. So women... Mm-hmm. aren't capable of love.
it does seem like, you know, kind of a, I don't
and
know.
Like,
do you think is that the society wide thing that's suggested here? Because I think it's mostly
so that's what I'm
the
saying.
Guy.
It might be familial, the food is love thing. Mm. The women can't cook thing is definitely society wide.
Yeah. I mean, there's a throwaway moment where the boyfriend that she doesn't end up being together with, the middle daughter, right? When he tells her about this new woman that he's going to be marrying, and he mentions directly that she's a great cook. So that maybe, like, it's more like this family's particular thing, and the fact that they have a patriarch who's also a chef.
I mean, maybe you can cook for your family, but for a long time, women weren't allowed to be sushi chefs. I know that's Japan and not Taiwan, but they said that their hands were too warm, and so they would heat up, which is actually physiologically generally untrue.
Yeah.
Certainly some women's hands are pretty much cement.
Anyone who's ever had a girlfriend probably can testify to the fact that women's hands and feet are usually pretty cold.
Yeah, because they're more of their blood flow goes to the center of their body to protect the uterus. But yeah, so like they weren't allowed because it would cook in their hands, supposedly. There you go.
The sushi.
Nutrition
science, always the most scientific of sciences.
So there were a lot of rules about women being professional chefs. I mean, everywhere, of course, but I know that specific rule about Japan.
I think there's like, it seems like there's a larger like societal, I don't know, like influence on that idea too.
I mean, there are no women in the like hotel kitchen or whatever that Chu occasionally works in that he's semi-retired from.
But I was gonna say, like, to that idea that like women can't love, like, it does always seem like every kind of old idea that you ever hear about romance always has to do with like men kind of tricking women into being in love with them, where it's like you gotta show her that you know something, or you got wealth, or you got something that'll trick her into being in love with you. Because women can't just love someone. They must be tricked. And that's like, that plays into a larger societal thing of like not treating women as people, I guess.
It's interesting that for being like such a guy who's clearly has a very strange way of expressing love, his daughter is all found pretty like in the end. I mean, it's clearly fucked up the first daughter, but later on they both like actually found pretty fulfilling relationships, seems like. Like both the oldest and the youngest seem like obviously pretty happy, and the middle one, you know, was a pretty sexually liberated whatever person who, you know, some things didn't quite work out exactly, but has like no trouble finding partners or being friends with men and whatever. And it's like it's good. I mean, I think it's pretty cool. It's just like it's almost surprising that that it happens this way, considering that the guy, you know, ends up marrying a very young very young woman. And I mean, honestly, that whole thing, I mean, there's it's you know, whatever. I'm not sure what the movie really, if how the movie even comments on it, if at all.
No, I was gonna say, I think it's kind of a funny reversal, because for the most of the movie, it seems like it's been kind of like knocking down social expectations, or like these are stupid, let's knock them down. But at the end, it's like, no, that one's probably good. We should, like, it's probably good that they're mad at their dad for doing that. Like,
I think that's a good social expectation
that much older men shouldn't date younger women.
And it's also totally understandable that then after a certain while, they will not be as mad at him anymore. Because, well, you just, I guess if you're still a family, and then you learn to be unmad at each other after a while, even if something that you might still disagree or whatever.
Yeah, I also think it's kind of funny.
The last scene of them together, the dad and his new wife, is very gentle, though.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I was going to say...
She's pregnant.
Yeah,
she's
pregnant, yeah. Say, because it seems like his whole perspective on the scene, because like what he keeps saying is like he's, you know, he's done it as kind of a favor to her, because she's got a child and she doesn't have anyone to support her. So he's like, I'm helping her. I'm doing a good thing for her. And so
I mean, I guess she could have...
it's this kind of opposite take on it, where you're like, well, I guess I could see how you could arrive at that.
I mean, fair enough. If that works for her, right? I mean, she's an adult. She can decide if this...
She is an adult.
It's true.
Yeah. Yeah, so what else we got?
Well, we also have... let's switch gears a little bit. Let's talk about the westernized film sensibility in this movie.
Okay, I brought that idea up. So I think it's interesting that this is like one of three of Ang Lee's movies that were made in Taiwan that were all co-written with James Shamus, who later also co-wrote Crouching Tiger and Dragon and Ice Storm and Brokeback Mountain, like a bunch of Ang Lee's films, and is now the CEO of Focus Features. It's been a pretty long collaboration between them. And as this movie is clearly written in Mandarin, performed in Mandarin, I wonder what Seamus's contribution might have been is probably like sort of making this movie a bit more accessible to Western audiences, because it doesn't play like a lot of other Taiwanese directors that I think we've talked about on this podcast plays. Like, it's a much more tight form of storytelling. Like
just had her working in like a generic, you know, Taiwanese restaurant, and he was like, no, make it a Wendy's.
Yeah,
that's the Seamus touch.
Yeah. probably that's his. Yeah. He's just around and he just gives weird ideas. And yeah, then he gets credited.
I met James Seamus.
Oh, really?
I don't know anything about his personalities because I met him for 1 second. Yeah, Brokeback Mountain had a pre-release screening at my school because Anne Hathaway was going there at the time.
Hmm.
That is cool.
That's cool. Some people in the film department got to have dinner with James Seamus and someone else. I can't remember. Not Anne Hathaway. She wasn't there. But I did meet her as well.
Nice.
Was Angley she cool? Was not there. She was not cool at the time, but I bet she's a lot cooler now. Not very many people in college are cool, especially if people have been famous there.
100% agree. Yeah. Very uncool people in college a lot of the time.
College. Traditionally a very uncool place.
I mean, you seem cool at the time. You think you're cool.
Yeah.
I think that, you know, there's a reason why this movie is pretty successful, made Ang Lee like a pretty household name, at least like with like film distribution companies as well. Like, it was pretty successful, I think, when it ran in the US. I think it's because there is certainly like a lot of like culinary flavor, I guess, from from Taiwan, the relationships between the people, I mean, there's nothing really that difficult to get into. There's nothing culturally like what do you call it? Befremdlich. There's a German word for that. Something that like puts you at a distance between you and whatever you're watching. So there's like, yeah, there's nothing that feels strange or whatever. If anything, the characters are, I mean, the country's already dealing with Western influence, obviously. That's probably why, how come the fast food and all that stuff.
Yeah.
It's like an obvious metaphor, but and like dealing with business, whatever issues at work and stuff like this. Nothing really that's that strange, except for the food. The food is strange. You don't really, it's never really explained in too much detail. You just see it. And like, you're just like guessing at what most of those ingredients might be or whatever. Like, as for me, for example, as a person who's not very versed in Taiwanese cuisine. So yeah, I think it's like pretty easily digestible. No pun intended.
No, intend the pun.
Pun intended. It's universal. I think that's maybe Seamus's influence on it, is like shaping the story, where it does feel kind of like I guess you would call it like a dramedy. Like, it feels
very... It has a traditional 3X structure.
Yeah, yes. It feels very similar to, like, the Western dramedy. You know?
It has the parallel stuff that Western audiences and writers love.
Mm-hmm.
Like, at the end, when the daughter decides she is going to cook, then he has to comment on her cooking, because they've been commenting on his cooking.
Yeah.
He's like, you left it in the ginger too long. And she's like, that's not a problem.
But then he can taste it. And it's a heartwarming moment. Yeah. He's like, I can taste again.
Yes. That's how good our cooking is.
Our cooking's so good it brings his taste back.
It's medicinal cooking.
Yeah. I also kind of like the reversal at the beginning of the movie too, when you see him like preparing all this food and you're like, oh my gosh, like all of this is gonna taste amazing, it looks amazing, and then like the first thing that happens is one of them is like, you overcooked this or whatever.
Sure.
You're like, yeah. Oh no, we spent all that time on it.
Because to us it might seem like, oh my god, this is the most amazing dinner ever, and then it's like just Sunday dinner, I guess, like that's this dude does this every Sunday. And they're all like in their late 20s, if not early 30s or whatever. I mean, except the young one. The young one is just like still like in college or something. But they've been eating that for a while. So yeah, obviously that's also a good thing. It would have been weird if they were like, oh my God, look at all this food. This is amazing.
I guess we also didn't talk about the youngest daughter's relationship, which...
She steals her
her friend's weird love interest, which I guess we could talk about that whole storyline, because her friend is
an accident. I don't know if it's a theft.
Kind of, yeah. Her friend is like playing games, I guess you could say. She's like, oh, I'll just make him wait. That'll make him love me more or whatever. Yeah. And then like basically just steers him right into her friend who keeps like coming out of like...
Her friend is having to act as a go-between.
Yeah.
Because so the youngest daughter is having to act as a go-between because her friend is not being... I mean, she's acting like a lot of 20-year-olds. She's not being very forthright and vulnerable.
Yeah, she's fucking with him a lot.
And the friend, because she's sort of not involved, and also because of like the environment that she was raised in, doesn't have any trouble being honest. So she's like, it's going to be another hour. And he's like, no, why did she do this to me? And it's like, and she just goes, if you're upset, then just don't do it anymore.
Yeah.
And he's like, I like when you say things like that. I should get you pregnant. And she's like, okay.
Yeah.
And then he does.
He takes her out to his massive apartment that he has.
Yeah, really nice apartment.
Considering he's a guy who just reads Dostoevsky all the time, and I'm not sure what he does.
That's the funny thing too, is that there's
his
a lot.
His parents left it to him.
But yeah, there's a lot of like westernized influence in like the like culture that people are consuming, and also the sort of like business that they're doing, because the middle daughter's job is basically like trying to route airlines through different countries. So they're always talking about like, oh, we may have to send you to Belgium or whatever. Or, you know, we may have to send, you know, should we send all these airplanes to Sydney or whatever? It's all about like this, I don't know, this sort of like globalization, I guess, of travel and all that. And that might be another sort of reason why it popped big in Western cultures, because it kind of like that was, I don't know, it feels like it was really the like beginning of that idea of like the world is a culture or whatever, I don't know. that weird kind of it seems like it started in the 90s, that idea of like the whole world is one culture.
Yeah, I mean, this is also before China emerged as like a really huge power the way it is like now, and America.
I feel like it was just
after the fall of the Soviet Union, and like obviously like all the Western influences on like all the other countries are just that much more pronounced. And I mean, Taiwan is really close to China, right? They're still like pretty undecided as to, there's like a lot of I think political strife there, Chinese or not. And so I think that watching this movie, you'd think, oh, they're just totally converting to the Western world a little bit. because I think it's written for, I think also for a Western audience. I think it's written with a clear idea that this movie will play well with Western audiences. I don't know how well it actually did it at home. And it was interesting to me to find out that, for example, the middle actress, who, like, you could say arguably has the main role in the movie, that she actually never played in any Western movies ever. Like, she played in a Johnny Toe movie opposite Andy Lau, and I think but like she never actually went to Hollywood or anything, because I think that, like, usually this movie would be like a setup for, like, a lot of these actresses and actors, like, to have, like, a career later. But I don't think any of them really did. I'd have to check, but I don't think so.
One of the men is mildly famous, I think.
That was interesting too, because I felt like I had seen her somewhere before, but I think she's just...
I mean, maybe you have. I mean, I'm just saying that she didn't really have
apparently I have not actually seen her in anything else. I think she's just glammed up. And
Winston Chow was in the Meg.
Oh, nice.
He's in the Meg. That's...
I think Sylvia Chang is actually probably the biggest actor of any of them. That's the young woman that Chow marries. She was in Mountains May Depart, The Red Violin, Johnny Toe's Office, Jackie Chan's Twin Dragons. So, like, mildly famous.
Yeah, sure. Actor.
The one that Chu marries?
Yeah.
What is her name?
In the movie, it's
Jin Rong, that's right.
But it's like, I guess it's... I've always been, like, kind of interested in the fact that, like, Ang Lee has always been... Like, he made movies like The Ice Storm, which is, like, such a strange movie for a Taiwanese filmmaker to make. That's, like, dealing with, like, teenagers, like... jerking off in the U.S. and stuff. Like, it's like such a weirdly specific, like, U.S. thing. That's that movie, that story. And yet, like, Ang Lee is really good at, like, being, like, adapting himself to, like, Western culture. I mean, it's not that weird, even. Like, I don't even know why I think it's special, but...
Connective tissue in all of Ang Lee's movies is not cultural, it's repressed emotions.
Yeah.
I believe it.
Which is why he made Hulk.
Yeah. And Brokeback Mountain, obviously. Mountain, yeah.
Tiger. But I mean, I'm saying of the superheroes for Ang Lee to make a movie about,
Hulk is Hulk. It's
gotta
be.
Sure. That does make sense, yeah.
That's a secret. All of his characters are angry.
Do you have anything else to say about Westernization?
I'm good.
I think we already covered the other one.
Yeah, we were going to talk about men raising daughters, but
covered that too. Yeah,
the others that we talked about.
Yeah, just, you know, the idea of, like, how... When, I mean, it happens in a different way when it's a single mom raising sons, but, like, there's something strange because, like, women are expected to be emotional and comforting and men are expected to not be that. And it's like, where do they learn it from? And in his case, like, the confusion of him not wanting to pass on the way in which he's being affectionate to his daughter. Mm-hmm. And the frustrations that causes, but, you know, I mentioned that under social expectations.
Yep.
Gender norms are stupid.
Yeah.
Let's get rid of them.
Let men be vulnerable. Let women be tough.
Yeah.
Let everyone be everything. All right. Well, I think we've pretty thoroughly discussed this one. Any other final thoughts?
Very hungry now. This movie has been complete torture for me. I've had the stomach flu for a week, and I've not eaten any normal food. And it was very, very tough watching this movie, not like having to lick the screen, because it's very, very delicious looking.
Because I don't recognize any of the stuff that's all like technically or figuratively evocative to me. I'm like, oh, that's food.
Yeah. Those dumplings are good, though.
I guess
the dumplings that they're making.
Yeah. A lot of times it's like
she's got the bowl of dough and just hitting it on that hot.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah.
Thing that's and like pulling cool. it off and then peeling the little dumpling skin.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, that's awesome.
Very cool. Yeah.
But there are a couple of times where they're just looking at like slop, like when he goes to the kitchen to help out, and the guy bought bad shark fins, and so they dissolved him into the thing. And it's just like a big bowl of red slop, and I'm like, okay. I have no connection to this food whatsoever.
All right. Well, thank you for listening, everyone.
If you're hungry for more content.
Yeah, if you're hungry for some eat, drink, man. we do have some eat, drink, man, woman from time to time. We should start a new format called Eat, Drink, Man, Woman. We're just eating and drinking while we're...
Agree. We have dinner in the movie.
Yeah, we have that. We haven't done it yet, but we could just change the name to that. Eat, drink, man, woman.
I agree.
That make would sure drive, that there's always that. A man and a woman on the podcast.
That yes, would drive it has some people crazy. Some people don't like the like eating sounds on the microphone.
Mm. Yep.
All right. Well, if you enjoyed this, you can check us out at fancyfilmfellows.com. We're also on Apple Podcasts. I keep calling it iTunes on all the other ones, but it's Apple Podcasts now because they're doing some sort of crazy shakeup over at Apple and splitting all their services into different things. But Apple Podcasts, we're also on Spotify. You can find us on Stitcher or whatever podcast aggregating system you use. Fancy Film Fellows. And what's next? What's our next? Do we know yet?
We don't know.
We don't even know. The next one's
probably
a surprise.
Reading and watching.
It'll be an exciting.
We got
surprise.
A reading and watching's in the tank.
Yeah, yeah. Basil's really cranking those out.
Yep.
But yeah, we'll see y'all all next time. Thanks for listening.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.